Welcome to Spruce Grove Alliance Church, your home.
We are in the best sermon ever today, Jesus' sermon, Sermon on the Mount. But before we get there, I just want to highlight something that's coming our way just 2 weeks from today. Our missions team has planned a big missions weekend called One Sent. We have lots planned for this weekend. We have a special speaker, our district missions guy, Jaron, a great guy. He's going to be coming and speaking to us. If you're going to miss a Sunday, don't miss the one that I'm going to preach, not this guy. This guy's super passionate. He's from India. Great missions guy. We have kids coming in, going to waving flags from all different kinds of nations. We got worship. We're going to sing in different languages. We have a missions fair after the service where you can go up and you can experience a taste of different cultures from around the world. And we're going to be highlighting our two missions groups, missions teams that we're going to be sending out here in the next few months. So don't miss that. That's 2 weeks from today on February the 2nd. Well, we've been marinating in this best sermon ever, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' best sermon, not mine. And we've looked last week at the Beatitudes. And these, we said, are upside down according to the world's values. You might remember I talked about my time in India, and I was driving on the opposite side of the road, and it was disorienting. It was counterintuitive. It was the opposite of what I was used to. And when we read these Beatitudes that Jesus highlights in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, it goes the opposite of the way that we think the world is supposed to operate. The world says we do the opposite of these, we're blessed. But Jesus says, no, the blessing happens when we're poor in spirit, when we're mourning, we're meek, we're hungering after righteousness, when we're merciful, when we're pure in heart, when we're peacemakers, and when we're persecuted for Jesus' sake. So if last week was the upside-down kingdom, today we're going to talk about how it is the inside-out kingdom, that this way of living comes from this deep wellspring of life from the inside, inside out. Many years ago when my kids were young, probably 5, 6, 7 years old, I was a youth pastor, and I remember coming home from work that day, and I was tired and exhausted from the week's work, and it was one of those days where, I don't know if you ever had this, but it feels like you're trying to fit 15 pounds of potatoes in a 10-pound bag. You know what I mean, figuratively speaking. There's just all this work that you're trying to get in. You feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And I came into the house, and my kids were like that little toddler age, and they don't understand all of the pressures that we face as adults. But when daddy's home, it's playtime. Daddy's here. Yay, daddy's here. Let's play. And so my son at the time, he was into Lego, and particularly Star Wars Lego. And so he had the latest set, and he was building all these little sets. And he would play all day, and then when daddy was home, it was time to engage in this playtime with Star Wars Lego. And so usually I'm pretty animated, and I try to help him create all these different scenarios as Luke Skywalker and Yoda and Chewbacca and all these guys, and we create these little sound effects, boop, choop, 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 pooch, and then, you know, the Lego breaks, but this day, I wasn't feeling it, but my son's like, Dad, Daddy, play with me, Daddy, play with me, and I know deep down, fathers, we know this, and unless we spend time with them at this age, they're not going to listen to us when they get a bit older. So I got down, and I started playing with them, and I was like, and Yoda goes over to Luke Skywalker, and then they do this little thing, and then they go fight the dark force, and I was making the right sound effects, and I was going through all the right motions, and then all of a sudden, I hear outside of kind of my world, it felt like I was in a bit of a dream, I hear this, Dad, Dad, Daddy, Dad, and I look, and my son's looking at me, and he looks at me right in the face, and he says, Dad, play with me, play with me. At such a young age, he knew that my heart was not in it, that I was going through all the motions, that I was saying all the right things, that I was making all the right sound effects, that I was doing all the right things that I should to be playing Lego Star Wars, but my heart wasn't in it. Do you ever feel like that in your faith? Do you ever feel like you're just going through all the right motions, but there's just a lack of inner, deep connection with God? Maybe there's this religiosity ritual that you're going through, but you're lacking this inner substance. Well, today, I want you to hear God say, as we engage with this text, engage with me relationally at the deepest level of your being. I want to know you. Play with me. Engage with me. In this next section of the Sermon on the Mount today, Jesus juxtaposes his kingdom living with a group of people whom many would have considered to be all about the kingdom, the Pharisees. As you're going to see, he says, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees, you're not going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. There was a way of living that was aligned with the reign of God. When God was on the throne of an individual's life, it was called the right way of living or righteousness. And Jesus certainly had it out with these guys named the Pharisees. Later on in chapter 23, in the most famous chapter called the Woe to the Pharisees, Jesus rebukes these guys in a way that didn't have much velvet on the hammer, if you know what I mean. And he uses two illustrations that essentially say the exact same thing. He says, you clean the outside of the dish, make it look really good, but inside it's filthy. It's full of greed and self-indulgence. Or you're like whitewashed tombs. In those days, they would clean the outside of the tomb and paint it white, make it look really good. But inside, you're full of dead man bones and hypocrisy and wickedness. You're going through all the outward actions of religiosity, but there's not this inward spiritual substance, this deep connection with God. And Jesus was essentially kept saying to the Pharisees, just engage with me, engage with God. You see, this next section of the Sermon on the Mount is juxtaposing two different ideas, the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. One of them says, I want to. The other one says, I have to. The spirit of the law is all about relationship. The letter of the law is all about ritual. The spirit of the law is about this internal connection with God in your inner spirit. The letter of the law is just about these external actions. One says, what's the bare minimum that I need to do to get God off my back? How can I find a loophole so that I can do what I want to do but also appeases God? And the other one says, how can I embrace all of the life-giving aspects of God's commands? Parents, we know the difference when our kids follow the spirit of the law or the letter of the law, right? Go clean your room. I had a pastor mentor of mine, his name is Gordon, and he used to always tell this story of his daughter when she was little. She's grown up now and has kids of her own, but they had told her to do something, and she didn't want to do it, and she did that thing where she stormed upstairs, and she stood at the top of the stairs, and she yelled down, and she says, okay, I'll do it, but I'm not obeying on the inside. And that's what Jesus continues to expose about the Pharisees. That they'll do it, that they'll do these outward actions, but there's no inner, like I want to. They have to. They don't want to. You see, the Old Testament prophesied that there was going to be this new mode of operation introduced by Jesus in the New Covenant, the New Testament, where he's going to put the laws within his people by his Spirit, and he's going to write it upon their hearts, Jeremiah said. Or he's going to put the Spirit within you and will cause you to walk in my statutes, Ezekiel prophesied. And in this next section of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus shows us what it means to follow God's commands with this inside-out living. I want to, not because I have to, out of a relationship, not out of ritual, out of this internal, yes, this gives me life. I want to do this, not I have to do this. So let's read about this. Jesus says, continues, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets, basically the Old Testament. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Keep that in mind. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of the pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. how does Jesus fit in the Old Testament? Well, whenever I think of Jesus and the Old Testament, I think of an iceberg. Isn't that a beautiful picture? An iceberg, you only see 10% of it above the water. 90% of it is below the water. This is why the infamous Titanic sunk, because it didn't see, it thought it was far enough from this iceberg, but it went out farther from what they could see underneath the water. But whenever I think about Jesus and the Old Testament, I think of an iceberg. But because Jesus says here, I didn't come to abolish them, I came to fulfill them. I came to fulfill all of the Old Testament laws, which means to fill out, to give a complete picture of God and what he meant behind these commands. I came to give you, here's the letter of the law from the Old Testament, but I came to show you the spirit of the law. So in the next section of this Sermon on the Mount, Jesus does six Old Testament case studies on what it means to bring the kingdom come, to bring the Beatitudes, to bring the spirit of the law into our relationships. And with each one, you could say Jesus pulls the iceberg up out of the water and shows us what it means to embrace the spirit of the law, not just the letter of the law, to truly engage with the heart of God and his intent behind the law. And he does six case studies, and he starts with one of the big 10 on the 10 commandment list. Murder! Do not kill. And we think, oh yeah, I got that one covered. Well, let's see if Jesus does. Let's see if we do. You have heard that it is said to people long ago, you shall not murder. But anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you are offering your offer at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar and first go and be reconciled to them, then come offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court and do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge and the judge may hand you over to the officer and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid your last penny. Now, every preacher, every communicator has this time in their sermon where they sense that people are kind of zoning out and they want to go on their phones and because this doesn't apply to them. This would have been one of those times in Jesus' sermons where he might have sensed that, oh yeah, I got this one covered. This one doesn't apply to me. I haven't killed anyone today. You know, in my 21 years of being a pastor, I have never had anyone come into my office and go, Pastor, I need help with something. I just keep killing people. Can you help me stop? I mean, I killed 3 this morning. Last week was a good week. I only killed 10 people. Like, how do you do it? How do you go through life and just not kill people, right? Like, we're doing this thing called vision verse where you're selecting this vision verse for the year. I checked the past 3 years when we have all chosen a vision verse, not one of you have chosen something from Exodus 20 where it says, do not kill someone. If you did, you might get a phone call from me and would say, hey, let's talk. How's your stress level right now? Any sharp objects on you right now? Because this is the one where we think, okay, we got this one covered. 99.9% of us, 99.99% of us can say, yeah, I haven't killed someone. I don't plan on killing one. But Jesus here lifts the iceberg up out of the water and he shocks us about what it means to embrace the spirit of the law and God's heart behind this. And this is what I like to call being aware of the seed of contempt that could escalate in your life. This seed of contempt that could germinate in your and grow in your heart and work up to something more violent or even killing someone. And so he says, you need to kill that seed of contempt. That word raca there means you empty-headed, worthless, or good for nothing. So that's like looking at someone and saying, you stupid idiot, And then escalating to like, you blankety blank. And do you see how that can, that's the seed of contempt right there. And so Jesus says, you, if you have that attitude in your heart, you're just as guilty of hell as murdering someone. And that's what it means to follow the spirit of the law. But it's not just looking out for the seed of contempt in your own life. Notice in the text, it was looking out for the seed of contempt that somebody has in their life against you. Remember he said, like when you're worshiping at the altar and you there remember that someone has something against you, stop worshiping me, Jesus says, and then go and make it right. Like, just think how shocking that is. Like, God, Jesus says that, like, when you're at the temple and you're like, God, you're amazing. God, you're awesome. God, oh, I love you, God. And you're having this vertical conversation. And you remember in your heart that someone has the seed of contempt in their heart towards you. Stop this conversation. Stop it right there and go and make it right. And that is following the spirit of the law of do not kill. Think of it this way. You've seen these forest fire index on the green side. If everything's soaking wet, they put it there. If everything's tinder dry, ready to, any spark could light things up, it's over on the red side. As kingdom citizens, we're to have this internal gauge where we sense in our own heart if we're moving towards the yellow, if we're moving towards the orange. Or we're to have this internal gauge where we have done something or we've said something and we sense that the gauge in somebody else's heart is moving towards the yellow or to the orange so that it doesn't move over to the red and become tinder dry, and right? This, the most misquoted verse in the New Testament has to do with this. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am with them. Often we hear that verse in conjunction with a small group that's gathered, whether it's a prayer meeting or church, and we go, 1, 2, 3, oh, Jesus is here, but it has nothing to do with that. In Matthew 18, that has everything to do with bringing peace and mercy into our relationships. It says, if your brother sins against you, go to them privately and have a conversation. That's two people. And he says, if he doesn't listen, then take someone with you to be kind of a mediator. That's the 1, 2, 3 people. And so when two or three gather together to have a conversation, to bring peace to the relationship, in poverty of spirit, to bring an attitude of mercy, God says, there I am with them. There the kingdom comes. Do you want to know maybe why you don't experience the Spirit of God? Do you want to know why the kingdom is not present in your life? It's because you won't reconcile. It's because you won't have a conversation with someone who you know has something against you. The very verse before that says, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. We can be binding up the presence of God in our life because we have a seed of contempt against someone. And we won't have that conversation. We won't even go and have that two or three conversation. God says, when you have that conversation, when two or three come together in my name with the beatitudes of poverty of spirit, of meekness, of peacemaking and showing mercy, there I am with them. The kingdom comes right there. And so to embrace the heart of God, the spirit of the law, do not murder, it's not just about not taking an object and hacking someone and killing them, of course, but it's being about being proactive to promote peace in our relationships. It's about de-escalating conflict in our relationships. Murder. Well, the next two have to do with the most important earthly relationship that God has designed, marriage. And again, he hits on one of the big 10, the 10 commandments, do not commit adultery. Let's see what Jesus says about this. You've heard that it is said, you shall not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go to hell. And again, it's not just about not having physical sex with someone other than your spouse. Jesus lifts this iceberg up out of the water and shows us what it means to embrace the spirit of the law on this thing. There are few things more painful than dealing with sexual unfaithfulness in marriage. And as your pastor, I unfortunately sometimes get a front row seat to that excruciating pain. I literally had to go last year and pick a man up off the floor because he was in grief. There's this whole web of lies that he had uncovered because of this one issue. And a puddle of tears. I literally had to soldier carry a man out of his house because he just couldn't get out of the house. I get the text, help. I had to carry him out. That's what this does. Marriage is so sacred. And the sexual union between a husband and wife is to be exclusively a precious thing shared between the two of them. And it's given for their joy. I watched this kind of humorous video, just a two-minute video, and it's a daughter and a granddaughter in the kitchen. They're getting supper together, and they're preparing food and chopping it up and putting it on the stove. And the granddaughter asks the grandfather, hey, did you like the gift I gave you? And he goes, yeah, I like the gift. Yeah, it was good. And she's like, oh, good, because I was afraid you wouldn't be, you wouldn't like the apps on this thing. She goes, and then he comes over and he goes, what do you mean by apps? And he has this cutting board on in front of him, and he has all this food on it, and he's chopping it, and he pushes the food into this pot, and then he goes over to the sink and he runs it under this cutting board under the water, and he throws it into the dishwasher, and this woman is just like shock and awe, like, that's not a cutting board, that's the gift I gave you, right? That's an iPad, that's not a $5 cutting board, that's a $700 iPad that I gave you. You obviously don't understand it. That's not what that's supposed to be used for. Kingdom of Heaven citizens know that sex in marriage is a precious and a very valuable thing. And it's not something to be treated like a cutting board. The world treats it like a cutting board. This one flesh, this sacred mingling of souls, this fusion of people at the deepest level of their being. And it's something to be protected. Sex is to be cherished exclusively between that married couple. And because of that, Jesus here speaks in hyperbole. He says, pluck out, if you even sense that you're even going there, kind of like the seed of contempt, if you even sense that you're even going there with your hands or your eyes, like pluck your eye out, cut your hand off. He's speaking in an exaggeration to say that we need to take drastic measures, if you even sense that you're even going in that direction. This isn't a cutting board. This is something like you would treat an iPad carefully. You're going to treat it carefully. This is about internet accountability, about who you talk to and what you look at. This is about not being alone with someone of the opposite sex who's not your spouse. This is about keeping conversations from going to an emotionally deep level with someone who's not your spouse. You should not be going to someone other than your spouse with your pain or your joys. If your proclivity is the first thing is to go, oh, I'm having a bad day, and not go to your spouse, that's a problem. Or, oh, here's something exciting that happened, and it's not first to your spouse, that's a problem. This is about being careful that joking doesn't turn into flirting. On the East Coast, they have us this saying, row away from the rocks, bye, row away from the rocks. Row away from the rocks. If even, that's what Jesus, do something drastic if you have to protect this precious thing. It's not just a $5 cutting board. It's more expensive than that. And so Jesus lifts this iceberg up out of the water to show us that to embrace the heart of God, the spirit of the law, it means going to great lengths to protect this sacred union with the purity of heart and hungering and thirsting after righteousness. But Jesus here keeps talking about the kingdom come in our most important earthly relationship, and he talks about divorce. It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you, that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes her the victim of adultery. And anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. These are some of Jesus' most pointed words about divorce. Now, because of Israel's depravity, there was this off-ramp of divorce under certain conditions. At one point, the Pharisees asked Jesus, why did Moses in the Old Testament allow divorce? And Jesus replied, Moses permitted to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But that was not like that from the beginning. In Deuteronomy 24, under the Old Testament law, it permitted divorce because of something indecent. And the problem was there was this massive debate over what that meant. And in Jesus' day, what was happening, because of this ambiguity over something indecent, men were divorcing their wives for the most trivial matters. They were just bored with them. Or they didn't like the way they cooked their supper. They didn't like the way they acted this way. Anything trivial matter, they could, I divorce you. And then this woman was left on her own. This was partly, too, to protect the dignity of women in those days as well. And so this was a loophole to get what they wanted instead of working through marital issues. Look, the only people who think that marriage is easy are engaged couples or people that have been married for 6 months, right? And then you wake up one day and realize that you are both narcissistic, selfish, broken people, and somehow you have to make this thing work. And she squeezes the toothpaste from the top of the tube, and he squeezes the toothpaste from the bottom, and that was really cute for the first 6 months, but then you want to claw each other's eyes out, right? That's how marriage works. In 100,000 different ways. But Jesus here has this high view of marriage, and he's against this idea that marriage is just this trivial thing just to be taken lightly, and you should run at the first sign of turbulence. Marriage should never be broken. Jesus, it says God hates divorce, and only in the most extreme circumstances, like sexual unfaithfulness, should you ever consider it. Work through the turbulence. Work through the turbulence. So the letter of the law says, well, I don't like my spouse. Here's a loophole I can get out of there. But the spirit of the law says, till death do us part, and only in the most extreme circumstances like sexual unfaithfulness will I even consider pulling the shoot on this thing. And I'm going to work through this turbulence with the Beatitudes, the attitudes of the Beatitudes, poor in spirit, meekness, merciful, peacemaker. Now, I married up. My wife is amazing. She is the embodiment of the Beatitudes that we talked about towards me. And she has to put up with me. So we share our location with one another on our phones, and there's all kinds of apps that do that, partly for accountability, but also just for convenience. You know, she's coming home from work, and I can get supper started or something like that. And so on Saturdays, she'll go shopping and get groceries and go to other places, and so sometimes I'll see where she is, and I'll go, oh, why are you in there? And so I'll call her, and sometimes I have a little bit of fun with it, and I'm like, hi, beautiful. How you doing? You look amazing today. She says, oh, thank you. How do you know that? And I said, well, I'm right behind you. And I'm not, okay? And I'm looking, and she, I'm right behind you. And then I like lead her on. I'm like, no, I'm right here. I'm waving my hand right behind you, right behind the sky. She says, no, you're not. Where are you? And then finally she puts it all together. She's like, oh, stop it. What do you want? And then we'll chat. And so just a few weeks ago, I tried this again, and I'm sitting on the couch with my daughter, and she is reading a book. And I said, oh, watch this. I call my wife, and she's like, I'm like, hey, beautiful, you look amazing. And she said, I'm right behind you. And then I start going on, yeah, I'm right here, just waving at you. I'm right here. She said, Brent, stop it. There's no way you can be right behind me. I'm at the hairdresser right now. I said, she says, you're on speakerphone, and the hairdresser is laughing at you right now. And my daughter, who doesn't miss a beat, she just rolls her eyes at me, and she looks at me, and she holds out her book. She says, the next chapter is about you, Dad. And the title of it was The Idiot. my wife married an idiot. And it takes an extreme amount of poverty of spirit, of meekness, of peacemaking, and sometimes even a little bit of being persecuted to live with me. And that's Jesus' view of marriage here and divorce, that only in the most extreme circumstances would you even consider it, but live the Beatitudes as much as you can. And then Jesus moves on from divorce to talk about oaths and honesty. And this gets a little confusing, but we'll talk about it. Again, you have heard that it is said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot even make a hair black, white or black. All you need to say simply is yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Now, remember when you were kids, you used to do this thing where you'd cross your fingers and put it behind your back, and so it means that you could tell a lie or you weren't bound by something that you said. Well, the Pharisees had their kind of cross their fingers, put it behind their back thing as well. The Pharisees said that if you swore by lesser things like earth or Jerusalem or your head, it wasn't as binding or true. So you didn't have to do it, or it wasn't the most as true. But if you swore by greater things like heaven or God's throne, that was like super binding or the most as true. So what they had was kind of degrees of honesty in their conversation or degrees of commitment in the things that they had to do. So this is about not finding loopholes to get out of the promises that we make, or not adding things to our language to make it more true or more legit. Like, so Jesus says, just simply let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you have to add something like, cross my heart, hope to die, poke a needle in my eye, may God strike me dead, I swear on my mother's grave, as God is my witness to some of the things that you're saying, it's assuming that some of the other things that you're saying aren't as true as the thing that you're saying. And so don't live that way. Let everything that you say be true. Let your yes be yes, your no be no. A person of deep character that wants to be about the kingdom doesn't need to add all those extras to prop up their honesty. So live in such a way that everything that you say is believable. Or all that you say that you're going to do, you do. Think about it this way. You've all met someone who never keeps their commitments, right? Yeah, I'll be there. I'll give you a call next week. You know they're not going to call you next week. Like, they're just trying to get you off, right? Don't be that person. Or here's an even better one. You've all known someone who you're not sure if you believe all of the story that they've told. We all know someone like that. Don't be that person. You're like, I'm pretty sure that happened, about 15% of it, but there was a little bit of embellishment in there, a little bit of like, you didn't tell part of the story. Like, don't be that person. Live in such a way that everything that you say is believable. Perhaps this is helpful. I had an interview with a pastor once many years ago at another church, and we kind of asked him about his past, and he kind of dropped a line in this interview process of how he had spoken at this Franklin Graham crusade. Now, Billy Graham, you know, Billy Graham is a, and I think, whoa, and automatically went, wow, like he had spoken at this Franklin Graham crusade. But he kind of mentioned it in passing, and he kept going along. About 10 minutes into the conversation, he just kind of pulled a time out, and he says, wait a second, I feel like I kind of oversold myself. I feel like I like you think I'm bigger than I actually am. I dropped that kind of thing, like I spoke at a Franklin Graham crusade, but it really wasn't that big. It was actually kind of like a month after the main event, and it wasn't even in the main city, and it was in a high school basement. There was only 30 kids there. So just don't think that I'm like this big wig guy. And right there, we saw him exemplify the Beatitudes, poverty of spirit, meekness, right? And so in my mind, I thought, you're hired right away. And that's kind of gets at the essence of what Jesus is talking about here. Don't live with any pretense. So the letter of the law is when we live according to the letter of the law, we can create loopholes in our conversation. We have degrees of honesty. The spirit of the law is about living with this deep character and integrity, being completely trustworthy and reliable, no false pretense, no deceit, no misleading information in our conversation. Honesty. And the next two, what we'll do together, because they kind of fit hand in glove, revenge and enemies. You've heard that it is said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you to take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, then go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You've heard that it is said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what will be your reward? And are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Now, I don't think we need to exegete the Greek on this one. This is easy to understand, but it's a lot harder to apply. Many people point out here that in Roman law, a Roman soldier could look at anyone and say, you carry my stuff for 1 mile, and you had to do it. And so Jesus is saying, he's just speaking right to the culture today, even if your enemy says, carry my stuff with 1 mile, carry it 2 miles, go the extra mile. And that's even a language that is outside of Christianity, and that's where it comes. It comes from this right here. Revenge and love for our enemies. I mean, have you ever noticed that things always escalate with our subjective understanding of fairness? Just watch a hockey game that a ref lets get out of control, right? This team feels like they've been wronged, and the ref doesn't call it, and then they take it here. And then this team feels like they've been wrong, and then they take it here. And then you have a whole game right out of hand. A prank that gets out of hand, water, getting somebody soaking wet. And you can just see how it just escalates. Our idea of fairness is so subjective. And that's why this law was given. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. So it was exact fairness. But Jesus says, that's not the heart of it. That's not the spirit of it. The heart of it is actually reflecting the heart of God. Be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. That doesn't mean that we need to be perfect to receive the kingdom. This is about reflecting the character of your perfect heavenly Father as his children. Act like his children, just like he does. Act in the spitting image of God. And Jesus modeled this for us in his life. His life was the best commentary of his words. Somebody said it once this way. Returning evil for good is satanic. Returning good for good is human. But returning good for evil is divine. And so Jesus pulls the iceberg up out of the water, and we realize that this is about exemplifying all of the beatitudes in our relationship. Poor in spirit, mourning, meekness, hungering for righteousness, merciful, pure in heart, being a peacemaker, being willing to be persecuted for Jesus. And so to reflect the character of God is not about just looking to extract our pound of flesh, but giving a pound of flesh. That's the spirit of the law. Now, operating in the background, let's land the plane. Operating in the background of this text is another teaching that Jesus has in John chapter 7. He says this, whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of them will flow rivers of living water. And by this, he meant the Spirit. There's going to be this rejuvenating, life-giving water that comes from inside to others in your relationships with others. When I was at Briarcrest as a student back in the late 90s, I was on this thing called Youthquake Student Team, this massive youth event where kids would come, and in the evening they would have this really big concert from a Christian band that would be there, and they brought in these big speakers there. And so I had access to backstage because I was on the Youthquake Student Team planning this event. And I remember they would have this huge mosh pit at the front of the auditorium where kids would just jump, and there was this haze and this sweaty haze over top of the mosh pit for like 2 hours while these kids jumped. So what I did is I went and found this massive water gun this super soaker water gun with it held about 4 liters of water, and I went backstage and I would fill it full of water and I would stand on this speaker and I would hose down the mosh pit. And I had a friend who was in the mosh pit, a roommate of mine, or a hallmate of mine, and he said, "Man, that was so refreshing." And he would look at me like, "Spray me, spray me." When you would just spray me in the face, that was so rejuvenating and refreshing. And it's this idea that we have this living water, this rejuvenating water in the inside that we can then bring the kingdom come. We can give to somebody else in our relationships with others. And so when it comes to murder, it's not just about not killing someone, but it's about proactively seeking peace and mercy in our relationships. When it comes to adultery, it's not just about not having sex with someone who's not our spouse, but it's going to great lengths, to drastic measures to protect the sacredness of this thing. When it comes to divorce, it's not looking for a loophole when we hit turbulence, but living out the Beatitudes in our most important relationship of marriage. When it comes to honesty and oaths, it's not looking for loopholes in our conversations so that we don't have to keep our word or we having degrees of honesty. It's about speaking from a place of inner security and integrity so that people believe everything that we say. And when it comes to revenge and our enemies, it's not looking to extract our pound of flesh that we're owed, but giving that pound of flesh to de-escalate the conversation and reflect the character of God. It's this inside-out living, living from the spirit of the law, not the letter of law. So you, if you're a kingdom citizen, you have a massive water gun from the wellspring of living water. Go soak someone today.
Thanks for listening to this week's message from Spruce Grove Alliance Church. For more information or to hear past messages, please visit sgac.net.